Hello. It's very exciting to be here today. I'm a pediatrician in Alexandria, Virginia, and this is an exciting week as a pediatrician because earlier in the week we released our updated policy statement and technical report on global climate change and children's health. So that's now available on the American Academy of Pediatrics website, and we actually now have a whole page dedicated to climate change on the AAP website. So it's available now to anyone who's interested. And so I'm here today to discuss bugs, bread, and babies, where climate change and child health collide. And I have no relevant financial relationships to disclose. So climate change is causing shifts in natural systems, the range, life cycle, growing pattern, and disease dynamics of many living organisms are being affected by changing climate conditions. And these changes must ultimately impact human health, and children are particularly vulnerable to these effects. It's estimated that greater than 88% of the global burden of disease due to climate change occurs in children under the age of 5. And children in the United States are already experiencing changes in the pollen allergy season, altered infectious disease patterns, increased severe weather events, and possibly currently changes in the nutrient content of some crops. I'm not going to be discussing all of these impacts today, and there are others, but due to time constraints, I'm going to be focusing on just a few. And I'm going to start with a discussion of allergic rhinitis in children. So hay fever or respiratory allergy is very common. It's one of the most common chronic diseases that we see. And it affects about 16.5% of American children between 1999 and 2013. And climate change affects seasonal allergies through two main mechanisms. The first is through a lengthening of the growing season and a lengthening of the frost-free period. So the first frost is coming later and the spring thaw is coming earlier. In addition, higher atmospheric CO2 concentrations directly appear to increase ragweed plant pollen production. And this slide indicates the changes in the ragweed pollen season by latitude in North America. And more northern regions have experienced a greater lengthening of the frost-free period. And these regions have a corresponding greater increase in the allergy season. So at the top, you see southern Canada. There's been almost 27-day increase in the allergy season, and this is related to their significant increase in days without frost. As you go south to mid-latitudes of the United States, the frost-free periods increased by about 10 to 15 days, and then if you get into southern regions, which do not have much frost to begin with, they've had little or no change in their allergy season. Now this slide discusses how ragweed plants produce more pollen when grown in conditions of increased temperature and CO2. Plants grown experimentally in today's CO2 concentrations produced about twice as much pollen as in CO2 concentrations of last century. On the right, the blue line is from a study that compared plants grown at concentrations of 280 parts per million and plants grown at CO2 of 370 parts per million. And plants grown at 370 produced about 130% more pollen than the plants grown at 280. The second line, the pink line depicts how much pollen was produced by plants grown at CO2 concentrations of 600 parts per million, and those plants produced about 320% more pollen than those grown at 280 parts per million. And B, the green line, is from a different study which showed that when you increase the pollen, the concentration of CO2 from 350 to 700 parts per million, plants produced about 60% more pollen. So I'm now going to shift to a discussion of climate change and infectious diseases, and I'm going to focus on those which have been, to date, researched most extensively. Climate-sensitive infections include diarrheal illnesses, food and waterborne, And those are due to, one, increased temperature, creating ideal growing environments for some pathogens which cause gastrointestinal disease, and also increased heavy precipitation events can overwhelm water sanitation systems, resulting in community outbreaks of gastroenteritis. Also, vector-borne diseases, and these are influenced through shifts in their range due to warmer temperatures allowing certain vectors to become established in regions where it was previously too cold. And also, warmer temperatures appear to foster insect populations in regions where they're already endemic. And lastly, emerging infections such as coccidioidomycosis or valley fever in southwestern United States and amoebic meningoencephalitis, which is a very rare but generally fatal form of encephalitis, which occurs, which you contract through swimming in, well, primarily swimming in warm freshwater bodies. And this was historically limited to the southern states, but it was since documented, I think, in 2011 in Minnesota after a heat wave. So I'll start with discussion of Lyme disease. So Lyme is most common in children. Boys ages 5 to 9 are at the greatest risk. And below a certain temperature threshold, tick mortality outstrips their reproduction, so populations die out or fail to become established. And that can be stated as their basic reproductive number is less than one. And it's been shown that there's been a northward range expansion of the Ixodes scapularis tick, which carries Lyme disease in North America as well as in Scandinavia. And this occurred coincident to or after rise in temperature in these regions, but it didn't occur before. And this slide depicts projected northward range expansion of the Ixodes scapularis tick into Canada due to rising global temperatures. And the color scale represents the basic reproductive number for the tick. And the top slide, the top image, is the tick populations estimated from observations 1970 to 2000. But with warming, the habitat suitable for tick survival is projected to expand northward. So B is projected for 2011 to 2040, and C is projected for 2040 to 2070. And in the United States, Lyme disease increase has been predominantly in northern regions. Among the states where Lyme is most common, New Hampshire and Delaware have experienced the largest increase in reported cases since 1991, followed by Maine, Vermont, and Massachusetts. And this has been attributed historically to reforestation of these areas and burgeoning deer populations. But it's interesting that in Canada, where there's also been an emergence of Lyme, they have not experienced reforestation, but rather more of a deforestation. So this it does appear that climate is at least playing a role in this northward expansion in North America. West Nile virus is also sensitive to climate variables. This is an older study which found that the temperature has impacted the dispersal and amplification of West Nile virus in North America, and that West Nile virus always dispersed into new areas during years with above normal summer temperatures, and that amplification the following year occurred during summers with above or normal temperatures, whereas activity decreased during cooler summers. And drought has also been associated with increased disease activity. And this is somewhat counterintuitive, but it's thought to be related to the presence of water collection containers in human communities, creating ideal mosquito breeding grounds. And the 2012 outbreak in the South Central United States was one of the most severe on record, with over 5,600 cases, over 2,800 cases of neuroinvasive disease, and 286 deaths. And this occurred during a historic drought with precipitation lower than during the Dust Bowl and extreme high temperatures. So the last topic I'm going to discuss is nutrient impacts. And I find this a very interesting topic, which is really emerging now. And it appears that that CO2 enrichment, we know that CO2 acts as a fertilizer and increases the yield of many plants, but it doesn't just increase the quantity of plants, it also appears to alter the quality. And it alters the carbon and nitrogen metabolism in vegetative plant parts. And increased atmospheric CO2 decreases the concentration of protein, iron, and zinc in wheat, rice, and soybeans. These are known as C3 crops. There's less effect on crops known as C4 crops, which include maize and sorghum. And C3 and C4 are differentiated by their photosynthesis pathway. And these changes pose significant threats to child nutrition, particularly in developing countries where these crops are a major source of these nutrients. For wheat, barley, and rice, protein decreases 10 to 15% in plants grown at CO2 concentrations likely for year 2100. And I think it's interesting to note that you need a certain amount of protein in wheat in order to create, to make bread. And a total protein concentration of greater than 11.5% is required for adequate bread making. And there have been studies which have taken this wheat grown in higher CO2 and have noted that the quality of the bread is decreased as a result of the decreased or associated with the decreased protein content of this wheat. And the other graph depicts relative decreases of amino acids in wheat grains that were grown in 526 parts per million relative to 375 parts per million. And the grain yield did increase in this study, which is not surprising, by 13.5%. But the total grain protein also decreased by 3.5%. In addition, elevated CO2 influences the iron and zinc content of these crops. This is a large study from Nature in 2014, which evaluated 143 comparisons of the edible portions of crops grown at elevated and ambient CO2 concentrations. And these were done at studies across the world, in Japan, Australia, and the United States. And the elevated CO2 in these studies was between 550 to 600 parts per million. And it found that, on average, plants grown at higher CO2 concentrations, the iron decreased in wheat by 5%, rice 5.2%, and soybeans 4.1%. And children are at the highest risk of iron deficiency in the United States. And iron deficiency affects about 8% of American children and 25% of international preschool children. And these crops also had a lowered zinc concentration in wheat. Zinc decreased by 9%, rice by 3%, and soybean by 5%. And zinc deficiency is a significant concern internationally. Nearly half of the world's population is at risk, and millions of people rely on these crops for their zinc. So in summary, child health is inextricably linked to climate change, and health professionals have a vital role to play in understanding and communicating these health risks. And I would say that climate change policy offers us an unprecedented opportunity to protect the health and the welfare of all current and future children. Thank you very much.